You can catch Blue Raider football this Saturday as MTSU faces Western Kentucky. That's a rivalry. There's a whole lot of hate in that game. Hear all the action at 1 p.m. on 102.5 The Game and on 97.5 in Murfreesboro. Corey Curtis sitting in with Derek Mason. We've got the Preds in action tonight against the Vegas Golden Knights. And the guy who covers the National Predators for The Athletic is Adam Vingan. Adam, there is some question as to who's going to be in goal for both teams in this one. Who we got?
We won't know until at least 10:30 when the Predators take the ice for morning skate. You know, it does present an interesting dilemma, if that's the right word, for the Predators when considering how well UC Saros has played in these past two games, both victories against the St. Louis Blues, but also understanding that Pekka has been this team's number one goaltender for more than a decade. So I'm wondering if they have to tread lightly in terms of how they dole out these starts. Now, I can tell you that if UC Saros starts this evening against Vegas, according to my friends at the Elias Sports Bureau, it will be the first time in nearly 11 years that Pekka has dressed but not started in three consecutive regular season games for the Predators.
Now, has it been Saros, or has it been a change defensively for this team the last two games?
I think the improvement has certainly been there on the defensive end as well in most aspects of the game when you consider how poorly the team was playing in terms of its record, 1-6-2 before winning those consecutive games against St. Louis. But when you look at that 1-6-2 stretch, you know, I remember writing an article after the game against Vancouver in which they allowed five power play goals. At 5-on-5 in that 1-6-2 stretch, the Predators were second best in the NHL in expected goals against per 60 minutes, which is just a fancy way of saying they were doing a really good job of limiting high percentage opportunities for the opposition. Keep that in mind. Second in expected goals against, 31st or dead last in the league in actual goals against, which speaks to goaltending. Now, Pekka has been, for lack of a better term, bad in his past four appearances. He's lost all four. I think he's allowed 18 goals in those four appearances. A save percentage under 77%.
That's bad.
So he has certainly struggled. But there's enough controversy going around this team right now, so I'm wondering if they start Pekka just to make sure that they don't start a new one.
Now, listeners, if you want to catch Adam Vinga, go to The Athletic because he wrote a really good article on Victor, the injury of Victor Arvidsson and then Kyle Turris. And that's what everyone was wondering. We were wondering, now that Victor is down for some weeks, is this now an opportunity for Kyle Turris to be inserted back into the lineup? And lo and behold, he wasn't. What do you make of this? Because now I think the fans, and we heard your questions to Lavi after one of the games, and he kind of really didn't give you an answer. But I think he owed it to the fans to give a reason why Kyle Turris is not playing now.
Well, the fact that in the past week plus, the Predators have recalled two players from the American Hockey League and put them in the lineup over Kyle Turris, I think says everything you need to know about where he stands in the eyes of his coaching staff. I wrote in that article you're referencing, Derek, about how Victor Arvidsson's injury should give Kyle Turris an opportunity, that what Peter Laviolette decided to do with his lineup against St. Louis on Monday would reveal his true feelings about Kyle Turris. And I think that, plus the way he refused to answer the questions, and quite frankly, has continued to refuse to answer the questions other than to say he's made a lineup decision, I think is fueling the storyline. I mentioned this yesterday on Predators Insiders with Ryan Forth. It reminds me, I'm not sure if either of you recall this or not, but after Game 2 of the Stanley Cup Final, Pekka was pulled in that game. They lose big in Pittsburgh. Peter Laviolette, after that game and then the two off days entering Game 3 or leading into Game 3, was noncommittal about going back to Pekka in net. Then he starts in Game 3. He plays a great game. They win. And then after the game, he basically blamed the media for making a story out of nothing. Actually, he made a story out of nothing because he did not confirm that. If in his mind, of course, they were going to go back to Pekka, but the fact that he didn't say anything fueled 3 days of speculation. His continued refusal to answer the question about Kyle Turris, is fueling the storyline. That isn't to say that it wouldn't be a story, even if he came out and explained exactly why he was scratching Kyle Turris, but at least we would have answers, and we wouldn't have to keep asking him about it.
Look, when these coaches don't answer questions, all it does is lead to us having to speculate, and that doesn't help anybody.
No, absolutely not. And I know Peter likes to keep his decision-making process close to the vest, and he wants to have every competitive advantage that he can muster. But this is a situation where this is a problematic situation with no obvious solution. I have a feeling that Kyle Turris doesn't even understand why he's being scratched. I'm not sure he's even gotten an explanation from Peter Laviolette as to why he's out of the lineup. He's doing a disservice to the media, to the players, and to the fans by not explaining and being more forthcoming as to why he's not playing Kyle Turris.
And you're absolutely right, and we had a long discussion on this yesterday. If indeed, you know, you don't, there's a way you feel about Kyle Turris, and you've been trying to trade Kyle Turris or want to trade Kyle Turris, it doesn't help when you're not playing the guy, if indeed you want to make that move.
You're devaluing him by sitting him. There's no way that the team is going to, I mean, the fact that they weren't able to move him during the summer, which made sense. You know, they're definitely not going to be able to move him now. You know, what GM is going to take on a player with four more years on his contract after this one at $6 million per season, who's 30 years old, who's not playing? I mean, his contract is immovable. They have no choice but to make this work, but it doesn't seem like they're really trying all that hard.
Well, they've got a game tonight with the Vegas Golden Knights, and we had Dan Lambert on earlier, and you know, I asked him what was the difference the last two games, and, you know, he talked about being a desperate hockey team, and that's something that we hear hockey players say a lot. But it's easy to be a desperate hockey team against a bitter rival and one that is the current Stanley Cup champion. Does this team have the leadership, does this team have the culture to carry that level of intensity or desperation or whatever you want to call it beyond that back-to-back with the Blues?
Well, I certainly believe they do, and I certainly hope that they will play that way tonight, because even though Vegas isn't as much of a rival as St. Louis, if you look at the Western Conference standings, as of right now, Vegas is the first team out with 26 points in 26 games. The Predators actually have three games in hand on the Golden Knights, and they're 1 point back with 25 points. So when you look at the wild card situation, the Predators are 2 points out of the second wild card spot, which is currently held by San Jose. They have two games in hand on San Jose. I mean, these games are incredibly important. So even though it might not have the intensity of the past two games against St. Louis, I mean, this is a big game in the Western Conference pecking order when you consider how important it is to be in or very close to a playoff spot at American Thanksgiving.
When you look at the Predators minus Victor Arvidsson, this is a guy who's arguably the best finisher that they've got at the net. How do they replace that?
Well, they're trying to by inserting Daniel Carr into the lineup. He played with Matthew Shane and Mikhail Granlund on Monday. Now, Daniel made the team out of training camp, was waived in mid-October, went down to the American League where he was the MVP last year and was lighting it up. When he was called up the other day, he was in the midst of a 10-game point streak in Milwaukee. And the reason why, according to David Poile yesterday with Willie and Darren, that they put him in the lineup over Kyle Turris is because Daniel Carr is a natural winger. Now, Daniel Carr has shown in 100-plus games of NHL duty over the past 4 or 5 years that he hasn't been able to translate much of his success at lower levels to the NHL. He did have the shootout winner the other night, which was great. And he does have a nose for the net, but I think they're hoping that Daniel Carr is sort of like a Rocco Grimaldi 2.0 and perhaps a Victor Arvidsson 3.0. But when you look at the game at 5-on-5 the other night before the shootout, Daniel Carr played okay. I mean, I think his line was fine. But you know, you want what you saw the other night. You want at 5-on-5. You want that impact from Daniel Carr. He's shown he can do it at the AHL level. He needs to do it at the NHL level.
He's been a Brandon Bochenski 2.0. Brandon Bochenski, he lit up the AHL, but could never really do it at the NHL level.
You're pulling it deep there. That's a deep cut.
Well, you know, I actually covered him when he was a Norfolk Admiral, and he was playing with all those guys that led the Chicago Blackhawks to, like...
Did you work in Norfolk, Corey?
For 1 year. Yeah, I did.
I'm from Virginia Beach.
Oh, really? So fantastic part of the country.
Funny how that works.
I lived in the Ghent Village area of Norfolk, and
yes,
absolutely...
Beautiful place.
People have no idea. It's a fantastic part of the country, and I recommend it to absolutely everybody. All right, so
that's where I grew up.
Yeah, Virginia Beach is huge too. Mm-hmm. By the way, I mean there's 11 high schools in Virginia.
Good Lord.
Beach.
Yeah, 11 or 12 high schools. Back to Nashville.
back to Nashville, and back to the Predators. So, do you feel like defensively? I mean, look, their defensemen are offensively oriented. I don't think there's any question about that. Do you feel like they're headed in a better direction, though, with those guys tightening things up?
I do. I really do. And I think that defensively, in terms of just the play from the defensive play from the defenseman this year, I think it's been fine. I think Ryan Ellis and Roman Josi have been really solid as a pair. And I think when T.S. Ekholm and Dante Fabbro have been good as well, I think there have been some growing pains for Dante Fabbro, as you might expect from a rookie playing that sort of role. I mean, the third pair has been mostly miss, but that's what you would expect. I mean, how many teams actually have a good third pair, you know? I mean, mm-hmm. Predators were lucky to have Seth Jones on their third pair 4 years ago. That's not going to happen very often. I think the defensive play from the defenseman has been fine. I think the defensive play from the entire team, for the most part, has been fine. If you ignore goals against, which I know is the end-all, be-all, but if you look at the process, I think they've done a really great job of limiting quality. You know, I think as they've been getting better goaltending, especially from UC Soros out of late, the two sort of been working in concert, and I think that's what helped in those two games against St. Louis.
And that's why you're here. Thank you very much, Adam Vingan. Adam, have a happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you, Adam.
All right, gentlemen, have a happy Thanksgiving as well.
I'm going to have Mace, who's making his own cranberries, save some for you because
absolutely.
I don't want
them.
Please. Not want them. All right, enjoy the game tonight, Adam. Thank you very much. That is Adam Vingan from The Athletic. You can always check out his stuff. He'll, of course, be covering the game tonight, which is 7:05, and coverage starts at 6 right here on the game. Now, NFL fans, don't miss Nashville's best NFL pregame shows. Start your morning off with the kickoff from 7 to 9:30, followed by the NFL pregame show featuring Jared Stillman, Floyd Reese, and Chris Sanders live from George Jones downtown on 2nd Avenue. Sunday from 9:30 to 11:30 prior to the Titans taking on the Colts. The NFL pregame show is brought to you by Wholesale Inc., powered by RumbleOn.com, Kubota Tractors, Middle Tennessee Kubota Dealers, and Boom Boz Craft Pizza and Tap House. The Big Finish is next on The Morning Drive.